We are here in the matter of Maldonado versus Robles, case 63732. Mr. Andrews, Mr. Quails, first and foremost, I understand that this is a pro bono case, and I certainly appreciate the efforts of you all participating in the pro bono program. I think it is an important component of our access to judgment justice considerations, and so we appreciate the work that you are doing on behalf of that program here today, as well as on behalf of your client.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that.
And if you are ready, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Tyler Andrews of the law firm Greenberg Traurig, here representing the appellant, Urbino Maldonado. Your Honors, the issue before the Court today is a simple one. Really, what we're seeking this Court to determine is that an inmate cannot be found to have abandoned his community property by virtue of his incarceration. We are also asking this Court to determine that separate property of an inmate cannot be applied under NRS 123.090, again, by virtue of the fact that he is incarcerated, because as held in the Jewel v. Jewel case of this court, separate property can be used to support a spouse if needed unless there is no valid excuse. And what we would seek to apply here is that incarceration is certainly a valid excuse.
What would his wife's or estranged wife's responsibility be for, like, these cars and all that were left? Does she, obviously it's kind of an ugly set of facts, you know, led to his incarceration, but this, from a legal standpoint, does the wife have any further responsibility to safeguard this property? What's your position on that?
Well, I think so, Your Honor, and I think that you touched upon an important point. I mean, again, this is admittedly somewhat of a fringe case that's come up, and there's horrible facts below, and it's certainly not my intent to get into or defend some of the actions that led to the reasons my client was incarcerated. However, I think that some of that emotion may have played a role in the underlying case regarding the community property and in the district court's decision there, family court's decision. I do think that there is a responsibility for community property under NRS 123225, despite any adversity between spouses, while they're still married, that community property, there is an obligation to maintain it. So the fact that the respondent in this case simply, you know, testified that she left certain of the appellant's cars in a parking lot or threw away all his stuff in storage without notifying him, I don't think it was proper for the district court to determine that just absolved her of any responsibility for those items whatsoever. And I think underlying that goes back to this idea that by virtue of his incarceration, the appellant somehow abandoned this property or gave up any interest he may have in it. I think that that's probably a dangerous precedent to set, as the purpose of incarceration is to punish or to, you know, serve as recompense for whatever the underlying crime was. There shouldn't be additional penalties that come out of the civil realm, and especially the family law realm of community property, that then go back and sort of heap more punishment onto an incarcerated person, because really they're in a position where there's very little they can do about it. They can't adequately challenge, they can't adequately, you know, be there to protect the interest in their own property.
Mr. Andrews, was there an effort by your client to seek the protection of his or the community property, which we frequently see in family cases where a motion is brought to the family division judge and says, you know, judge, I have reason to believe that, you know, some of this community property may be disposed of or hidden or otherwise abandoned, as in your case. Did anything like that happen below? Did your client make an effort to protect the property that way?
He did, Your Honor, and I think he did by bringing this action. I think one of the things that the district court may have gotten wrong here is that they presumed that he didn't do anything to protect his interest prior to the divorce filed for by the respondent. That happened in...
I get that. Well, I guess I'm not clear on my question. You know, again, unfortunately, back to the ugly facts that occasioned his incarceration, he probably knew that, there was going to be a dissolution of the marriage at this point, and nothing was done in advance of that to protect the community property?
Well, respectfully, there wasn't any indication that, he did know. I mean, I agree that that's probably something that he should have considered. However, the actual termination of the marriage didn't happen until 6 years after his incarceration. So he and there was no contact in that time.
So what was he doing to try to protect his property during that time, the 6 years? Anything? Does the record show anything?
No, Your Honor. I concede that there's no evidence one way or another what he did during that time. And while I agree with Your Honor that it definitely may have been prudent for him to have checked on his separate property, I don't believe he had a legal obligation to do so because he was still legally married. Obviously, the circumstances are that it's difficult, if not impossible, for him to have regular contact or to check in on his assets. And until he got formal legal notice that the marriage was, in fact, being dissolved and that there was a threat to his property interests, that's when he took action and filed.
So you're saying, let me hypothesize a bit here.
Sure.
You're saying that I am currently married and have some community property, that I am not allowed to take a car and sell it or abandon it at this point?
Well, I think that not without the consent or approval of your spouse. I think that because of the NRS 123225, I think that anything that you, let me put it this way, I think you could sell up to half of it, but if it's a community asset, if it's a true partnership asset, then both spouses have an equal right to that property. So I agree that in certain circumstances, 123.090 could apply, and that if one spouse neglects his or her duties and just abandons the partnership or the property without any justification and without any excuse, that's when that statute can come into play, and the spouse that has been neglected can...
Let's assume further, my husband never complained. I just went out and sold the car. I didn't want it anymore. He didn't care. Or at least he didn't voice any concern.
That's an interesting hypothetical, Your Honor.
I know that I have a duty, and cone of silence here to my colleagues, and with respect to...
I don't want
to
get in the middle of this myself.
It's just, like I said, I was just hypothesizing here. I'm not sure that there's a duty pre-divorce to necessarily... It's an interesting legal issue, but I'm not sure that I don't have the ability to go out and do that.
And let's take this legally. I agree with you with trying to subtract the emotional content of the facts, because really that's beside the point. But legally, if I walk away and I too am married from my marriage, let's say I just leave and I leave a bunch of stuff in the house, and Steve, my husband, doesn't hear from me for 6 years, are you saying that he has a correlative duty to take care of my belongings and things that I leave behind? Or is that evidence of abandonment that presents a question of fact as to which the district court is the master? He or she sits in judgment on whether there was an intent to abandon. When I moved to Carson and left everything in Las Vegas for Steve to take care of.
Right. Well, I think in that situation, Your Honor, that would be much more similar to what was contemplated under 123.090, which is, you know, a complete willing abandonment, not only of the community property, but of the marriage itself. And in that case, I think the statute is clear that the remaining spouse can dispose of that property.
Why wouldn't that same logic apply here? I get that we should not heap additional punishment, and if this were a retributive or vengeful motive, that would be one thing. But to my mind, to say that this woman had a duty to look after this property and the court cannot find abandonment due to the defendant or the your client's incarceration, that shifts the burden to the non-incarcerated spouse in a way that may not be fair either.
And adding to that question, in Justice Pickering's question is implied what she described in her hypothetical, and that is that the spouse leaves and there is no communication. No reason. I mean, it's not like being incarcerated means you can't write a letter that says, hey, you know, my F-50 is parked X, you know, you're going to watch it, aren't you? I mean, no attempt to protect that property. I mean, he wasn't prohibited from doing that by virtue of incarceration.
You're right, Your Honor. I mean, he did testify that it was difficult, if not impossible, to contact his wife. I do not, going to your point, I don't believe that she necessarily would be under a duty in all circumstances to protect that property if he indeed abandoned it. But I don't think that the court can find, just by inference of his incarceration, that that property is deemed abandoned.
But did it? Or did it say your incarceration combined with your exhibited utter indifference, you didn't write, you didn't call, you didn't ask family members to go get the property, nothing occurred. You agree that nothing occurred for 6 years in the form of asking someone to do something with this property.
I do agree, but I also agree that at the very least there may have been a duty to inform Mr. Maldonado that there was that the property was presumed to be abandoned and that the respondent was going to dispose of it as she saw fit.
So then Justice Pickering has the same duty to her husband that you just described. If she could,
no, he does.
He does. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I have none.
You abandoned it.
If there was an undisputed intent to abandon, then I don't believe that that duty would exist. However, here I'm saying by virtue of his incarceration, the district court can imply that that property was abandoned, and there should at very least been notice to the appellant that there was a plan or that property was now presumed to be abandoned and was going to be disposed
of. So the answer to my question is yes, Mr. Morris indeed has that same duty.
Unless there's an undisputed intent to abandon by virtue of no outside factors such as incarceration, then I think that the statute under 123 would apply and there may not be a duty. But I'm happy to brief that issue further. I think that raises a very interesting hypothetical. I think my primary argument here is that that sort of duty can't be inferred by virtue of the incarceration. So I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal if there's no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Quetz.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tom Qualls, and for a change, I represent the respondent in this case, Ms. Estrada Robles. I'm confident that this court has many important and challenging cases before it. This is not one of them. The district court found, number one, that there was no community property to divide at the time of the divorce, and that finding is supported by the record. That finding alone begs the question of why we're here. But we don't have to stop there, because the district court also found, to answer some of your questions, that during the time span, either 7 years approximately between his arrest and the filing of divorce, or 6 years from his conviction, my client was entitled to whatever community property assets there were for the economic support of herself and her children, the family. So the appellant put forward many different claims, that there was $10,000 in the house, that there was a bunch of personal belongings, tools, that there were the vehicles. And the district court made a number of findings that his claims were simply not credible. Now, this court is not in the business generally of second-guessing the district court's findings of credibility, but let's just say that there were $10,000 in cash that was in the house upon his arrest in, I think, 2005. Over, and let's just say, 6 years, over 72 months, $10,000 is reduced to only $140 a month. So even if this court were to find that that finding of lack of credibility should be overturned and that there were $10,000, certainly my client was entitled to $140 a month during that time.
So he, obviously, while he was in custody before the divorce, he wasn't contributing to the support of the
No, he was not contributing to the support of the family. I don't know how much he was contributing before, but certainly upon his arrest and once he was convicted, and he had a jury trial, once he was convicted, he was not contributing to the support. My colleague, who did a noble job in this appeal, cites to the fact that it's, you know, it's not his fault that he's not contributing to the family because he's incarcerated. Well, that may be true, but that doesn't mean that my client isn't entitled to use the assets that are there for her own economic support. She doesn't get that taken away from her because of his incarceration. So she is, that finding again by the district court that she was entitled to whatever assets there were is supported by the record as well, and there's certainly no reason to overturn that. But even if those assets were there, over 6 years or 7 years, those assets amount to very little towards the economic support of her and the family. And so that, again, supports the ultimate finding that by the time of the divorce, there were no community assets to divide. Additionally, the court found that directly due to the criminal sexual behavior of the appellant regarding her daughters, there was ongoing economic harm, ongoing emotional harm, which translated to economic harm. So then you've got sort of three tiers of findings there that support the fact that he's really not entitled to anything at this point, that if there were any community property, she had the right to use it over that time, and certainly the damages that he caused resulted in her being able to use the whatever assets there
Mr.
were.
Ross, I assume that you do not dispute what I believe is the nature of the law in this particular genre, and that is that without some expression of an intent to retain or a desire not to abandon certain property, that the district court is in the position to make the decision of whatever happened to it is that's just their call. Would you agree with that concept in this case? And that, number one, and number two, that there was no effort made by the appellant in this case to advise the wife, the court, or anyone else of his intent not to abandon?
I would agree with both of those statements. And I would agree that the district court appropriately made a finding of an abandonment. And I would also agree with what I argued in the briefs, which is that take that finding away. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether he abandoned it for all of the reasons that I said before. If he didn't abandon it, she still had the right to use it. But then the other finding that the district court made is that when he was convicted for sexually assaulting and abusing her daughters, he was on notice that she, at that point, she had no duty to preserve anything of his. She no longer had any duty of care there, and he was on notice of that. And I think that is that's sort of the third tier of that. I think that it was abandoned. I think there was no, and certainly even if there's a no contact order, he could, as one of you mentioned.
Was there one?
I don't know that.
Okay.
Generally, I know that there would be a no contact order, certainly regarding the daughters and possibly
regarding the mother as well.
But even if that was there, there were other channels in which she had actually given a bunch of this stuff to his relatives and said, I don't want it, you know. It's his. She didn't throw it in the trash, put it in a bag.
I thought they didn't want it either.
Yeah, she took it to his relatives and they said, well, we don't want it. I mean, I don't know how she has any duty more than that. I think she went above and beyond her legal duty for that. But again, I think, forget the issue of abandonment altogether. It's not even necessary to decide this case because of the other findings, because of the 6 years that elapsed. And whatever, you know, $10,000 sounds like a lot of money in one chunk, but again, it's $140 a month if you spread it out over time.
And the district court didn't find that that actually even existed.
He didn't even find that that existed. He said, I know your testimony is not credible. He wasn't working enough to have amassed that much money, and there was no proof that it existed. That he.
I'm just curious, is it in the record whether he had private counsel or the public defender representing him in the criminal charges?
I do not believe he had any counsel. I believe, if memory serves, that he appeared telephonically from the prison.
No, I think he's asking in the criminal case.
Oh, in the criminal case. Certainly, I don't know if he was represented by private or public defender.
Well,
certainly, he would
record.
Have had to have had counsel.
Okay, if it's on the record, it doesn't matter. But
I don't know if it's in the record, Your Honor, and I apologize for that. I think the conviction is in the record, and certainly the reference to the conviction is in the record, is in the transcripts. But I don't know how much of the criminal documents or proceedings were brought into this case. I can't remember that. I don't think it was.
The reason I asked is if he had the public defender and he supposedly had $10,000, then he may not have been indigent, you know, so it may have been a factor the court could have done, but if that wasn't brought up, then I'll drop that and we'll just move on to the issues that are in the record.
I don't recall that being in the record at all. I recall that the district court made several specific findings regarding his claims to property, including the $10,000, and he weighed both of their testimony and just said, I don't find that to be a credible claim. And then again, he sort of puts safety nets in later by saying, even if any of this property existed, she would have been entitled to it. In short, Your Honors, the appellant has not given this court any reason to overturn the district court's findings. There's no legal reason to overturn it, and certainly due to the underlying facts, overturning it would be somewhat unthinkable. But the standard is that if it's not supported by substantial evidence, then this court can overturn it. And I don't think the appellant has met that standard. And uncharacteristically, I don't have much else to say.
Questions?
Unless you have questions.
Thank you, Mr. Claus.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Andrews, I'm going to start you off with a question. It appears as if the district court in this case carefully measured considerations of the claim of community property and the claim of no abandonment. How would we, given the standard of review here, given the evidence that the record does provide us, how would we get around that? The credibility of the court is certainly not within our domain. It appears as if the judge, as I said, carefully measured whether or not there was property, and even if there was, there were storage fees, there were counseling fees, there were the move that was occasioned, you know, from one residence to the other. How could we possibly legally get around all of that?
Well, Your Honor, I do, first to point out in answering your question, there was no specific finding that no community property existed. I think the record is clear that while it was doubtful if that amount was very great, both the appellant and the respondent testified that community property did exist. And I think that what the...
In the past, but that by the time of the hearing it had been exhausted, or am I mistaken in that?
No, there was no specific finding that there was no community property existing at the time of the hearing.
Okay,
And along with that, I think that the error the court made was in finding that that the appellant did abandon his property or his interest in whatever property remained, even if it was a small amount, even if the restitution he was ordered to pay in the criminal case ends up encompassing that amount. I think the correct standard still needs to be applied here. And a finding of abandonment cannot be made unless there's an express intention. So I think to your point, Your Honor, you can't infer an intent to abandon by a certain period of time lapsing without any duty taking place. There has to be an express intention there. I think that's the error, and I do think that the underlying facts here are horrible, and I think that might have been part of the problem. I think that might have undergirded the district court's decision here. I mean, I have a young daughter at home myself. I can't even fathom what both the respondent and probably everyone in that courtroom was going through. However, I think that's even all the more reason that the proper standard should be applied. And if it turns out that...
But you're applying a different standard to other abandoners. And perhaps it's inappropriate to interject myself into this, but a person who you can infer legally, you can infer abandonment by a spouse walking away from the relationship and leaving things behind and falling out of communication for 6 years. It would be a permissible finding of abandonment.
Correct,
Your Honor. Of the property.
And the reason why is because under the definition of abandonment that we've cited under the case law, is that abandonment is complete at the moment when the intent to abandon and the relinquishment of possession unite. And so in that case that you're talking about, the intent to abandon would be clear. Here, incarceration, although it may, you know, imply some sort of misconduct or you know,
right, but he still he could have filed for divorce and asked for an order. He could have. There's all sorts of things he could have done. I get that being incarcerated is an inhibition on his ability to express his intent to keep that property. But 7 years of utter silence and inactivity, it. To me, unless you're going to adopt a rule that's more preferential to the incarcerated person than the person who just walks away.
If I may respond.
Yes.
I think that the distinguishing factor there is that by virtue of the incarceration, there is no per se intent to abandon anything. The only way that you can infer abandonment in that situation is like you mentioned, a length of time passing without some affirmative statement that I want to keep the property.
And isn't that what we have here?
Well, right, but I think that that's an improper definition of abandonment. Okay. I think there has to be an affirmative either action or word or deed or something that says, I am giving up title to this property.
Well, but the court found otherwise, and I'm going to draw your, I know we're out of time, but we're going to draw your attention to this. The court order found that your client acknowledged the adverse nature of their interest upon conviction and that he did nothing to protect his own property interests. And I would also draw your attention to the fact the judge did make a no community property finding, although he used a different word. He found on page 8 of the order, there is no community business for the court to divide in this case.
Your Honor, if I may, that was in reference to a specific house cleaning business that both parties testified to during the hearing.
The court goes on. Mr. Maldonado has not shown Ms. Robles cashed his final paycheck. That she possessed the $10,000. Therefore, there are no assets which exist for the court to divide.
There is a vehicle, Your Honor, that there was not. There were assets that weren't specifically disposed of in the order. But I appreciate the point, and I. If there's no further questions, I'll submit that report.
Thank you, counsel. Both Mr. Andrews and Mr. Claus, as I said, the pro bono acceptance of this case is something that is to be commended in this matter, so I appreciate your efforts. And I think even Mr. Claus would note that you had an uphill battle to climb in this case. Thank you so much for your arguments and your briefs here today. This matter will stand submitted.